Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her My People show. I am your host, Mark Hall, and this week we've seen yet another major example of the fact that, well, as Robert A. Heinlein used to once famously put it, never underestimate the power of human stupidity. There are so many people drinking the Kool-Aid and accepting that an amazing series of absolutely unbelievable events just happened to come together perfectly and result in the destruction of one of the key pieces of United States defense and national security. Security infrastructure, the port at Baltimore, and the Francis Scott Key Bridge, literally severing I-695 and taking out one of the United States' major hazardous material processing centers into and out of the country, among a whole bunch of other things that make it being a target a whole hell of a lot more likely than it being an accident. So here's one of the important questions for today. Does it really matter? After all, it's a done deal. And the impacts, dramatic as they will be felt not for months, but years. So, folks, I guess here's part of the answer, and the reason why it's relevant to the show that I want to put together for you today. If it really was nothing but an accident, I guess it's almost impossible to have ever imagined it happening in the first place. And if it's that unlikely of an accident, you can rest assured it couldn't possibly happen again. Whereas, if it's not, do you really want to bet your life against the obvious? Or, as I'm going to point out, keep betting your life against the impossible series of incredibly unbelievable events that just seem to be happening regularly now? Almost like, as I've heard it put, a flock of black swans. Think of it this way, folks. If you were to go to, say, Las Vegas and start putting dollars in slot machines and hit the jackpot on every single one of them 10 times in a row, well, that's possible, I guess. But I guarantee you, casino management is going to have some words with you in that little room. But if you're a swamp official, on the other hand, CNN, the WAPO, and the New York Times are all going to be pushing your story as if it was actually true. So I want to start off today with one of my favorite quotes from a really great novel that probably you've read. It has a lot of them, by the way. And it's Lewis Carroll's follow-on to the Alice in Wonderland book called Through the Looking Glass. The subject, arguably, is gullibility and believing impossible things, where Alice is talking to the Red Queen, and she laughs and says, "There's no use trying. One can't believe impossible things." "Well," said the Queen, "I dare say you haven't had much practice. When I was your age, I always did it for half an hour a day. Why, sometimes I believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast." So except for perhaps lacking the proper sexual proclivities, the Red Queen could be the White House press secretary, and she certainly sounds like she'd be thrilled getting her news from the likes of CNN. As for the rest of us folks, we need to ask a lot more questions and be a whole heck of a lot less gullible. So let's start with that story I'm sure you've heard by now, the Baltimore Port and Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse after it got rammed by an out-of-control container ship. And before we even know how many people actually died, Big Brother's unconstitutional 3-letter agencies are out there telling people, along, of course, with the whores from the White Whorehouse, that although we haven't even pretended yet to have an investigation, that the one thing you know for sure is that it's not terrorism. Which, come to think of it, may be truer than they'd like you to believe. If they do it, it's not terrorism. It's not even election fraud. It's democracy. General Michael Flynn was on with Alex Jones, asked, "Can we take this idea that it's terrorism off the table?" He basically said, "Hell no. We absolutely cannot do that," said President Trump's former national security advisor. And General Flynn called the container ship ramming the 1.6-mile-long bridge at the port of Baltimore a black swan event, saying that both the national security implications and resulting economic devastation are unquestionably immense. From there, let's work our way forward slowly with a couple of related stories. First, from Cliff Kincaid about the terror attack, as he puts it, in Baltimore. Considering the reality, it begins, of Chinese and Russian cyber warfare, as documented, even by the FBI and other TLAs, the assumption had better be terrorism until somebody is able to prove otherwise. Once, folks, that would have been an unarguably valid point, even though what we saw was a clear exercise in government CYA. Continued Cliff Kincaid, "They must think we're fools, and on that there's no disagreement." Laura Logan appeared with Steve Bannon on his War Room show, and this is so important and so detailed, I'm going to play an extended excerpt now.
Laura, you've been on fire. I saw the Gateway Pundit piece that talked about what you're coming out with. We've had a Posobiec. Look, as a naval officer, I can tell you, something is not right about this situation. I don't. They got pilots, the most professional guys around. I don't know how they steered it at 8 knots right into the foundational element of the bridge. They could have dropped anchor. They should have had backup systems. You say there may be something. Here's the other thing that's concerned me. Why they run to the mic? Had McCabe on this morning on at sunrise on CNN saying it's not terrorism. It's not terrorism. It's not terrorism. It might not be terrorism.
And here again, folks, he's right. It might not be, but they do not know that. But to make that claim just plain, well, strains any credulity.
But why do you come to the mic right away? These are the type, we need facts. We need empirical evidence. We need an investigation. What is your investigation telling you?
Well, I have a better question for you, Steve. Why are you coming to the mic telling the country that it's not terrorism when your own intelligence agencies are telling you it is? And I know they are, because I didn't make this up. These are not my words, right? I'm talking to people who are on the inside, some who are on active duty, some who are retired, and everyone, literally, from critical infrastructure in Department of Homeland Security to the intelligence agencies, they know there's no other, this is a cyber attack on a critical infrastructure corridor for the United States. This is, you know, for those people who think this is just a river, this is in Baltimore, what does this matter? You don't know anything about what you're talking about. This, the I-94 corridor on the eastern seaboard is literally what connects the north and south. And when I talk about hazardous materials, right, this is a brilliant, well-planned strategic attack on one of the most important supply chains in the United States of America. The only other one is in the western side in California. That's the only one that's busier. And what you have done, you now have shut it down. And when I talk about hazardous materials, what are we talking about here? This is refined fuels, right? This is propane gas. This is diesel. This is fuel. This is flammable materials. This is oversized loads, nitrogen, chemicals. Everything that you need for your economy to move has literally just been shut down for 4 to 5 years.
You got to admit, folks, that's impressive, even by deep state destruction standards.
And how did they do it? They knew that they had to target one of two main anchor points on that bridge. There are two load-bearing pylons that any structural engineer can identify that are on the end of each side of the bridge. These are the ones that are thicker and stronger than anything else on that bridge. And when you hit one of those pylons, when you take that out, the reason you see so much of that bridge collapse instantly is you just brought 50% of the span of that bridge coming crumbling down.
And she's right. And briefly, that is the thing that most struck me when I watched the video. It's literally like watching a bunch of dominoes come down.
And what you don't see beneath the surface of the water, Steve, is absolutely catastrophic. It is a structural nightmare and a logistical nightmare because you have the entire bottom part, the concrete part of that bridge, and you don't know the extent of the structural damage to that. And you won't know it until you pull all of that infrastructure out of there and you get to look at it. And so you're talking 3 to 5 years at best. And what you're talking about here is probably building a new bridge. So what you have effectively done now, you've shut down the I-95 corridor that's above ground. So now you're going to have to go north to New York. You're going to have to go south to North Carolina. Your trucks, your hazardous materials are going to have to go around Baltimore now. They're not going to be able to go through it. And what else did you do? You shut down the sea corridor, the shipping corridor, because now the port is shut down, right? And so all those tankers that are out at sea that have hazardous materials on them, those are going to have to all be rerouted. And why can you not move hazardous materials through the tunnel? Why is this such a big deal?
And here she goes into quite a bit of detail.
Because hazardous materials, for example, oversized loads, they don't fit in the tunnel system.
Yep.
And there's other loads that are so dangerous that they require a permit. It takes time to get a permit. It costs money to get a permit. It requires an escort, right? You've seen it on the highways sometimes. You've seen when you have these massive oversized loads and they've got escorts all around them, these huge convoys. Well, what do you do on one of the busiest corridors in the United States? You don't shut it down in the day so this can happen. That means you can only move this stuff at night, which automatically impacts the amount of traffic that you can use. The tunnel is going to be overloaded. This is what you call death by a thousand cuts. It is an absolutely catastrophic attack on critical infrastructure, and you cannot see it because a cyber attack is unseen, just like the attack on 2020 on the voting machines that you cannot see.
Not only that, folks, it looks like they don't want you to see. They're not going to allow you to see. They're going to keep on lying, and they're going to tell you you're a conspiracy theorist if you see something that they just aren't going to allow. Understand, too, that they're not about to tell you what the real effects of this are going to be down the line. But they're going to be very, very real and very, very destructive, as almost certainly planned. By Thursday morning, we were starting to see some separation in the oil and water of propaganda, where the Gateway Pundit featured an update via Laura Logan that says, in the aftermath of that unbelievable set of coincidences, yeah, sure, that resulted in the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge early Tuesday morning in Baltimore, questions, who'd have thought it, are being raised about the nature of that incident. The bridge was a crucial artery for the Baltimore Beltway, known as I-695, and it saw a huge section plummet into the Patapsco River after a cargo ship, one way or the other, managed to collide with one of its major support columns. As we talked about yesterday, seasoned journalist Laura Logan, in a statement Tuesday, alleged the incident was not an accident. Incident, obviously, but rather a strategic attack. And that claim gathered further attention as she joined Steve Bannon on the War Room to discuss the implications of the bridge's demolition. And she asked this key question then. Why is anybody in a so-called position of authority coming to the mic and telling the country that it's not, it couldn't be terrorism, when in fact your own intelligence agencies are telling you it is? And in fact, anybody with a brain would not rule out something so obvious until there was actual evidence proving otherwise. She continued to explain that her sources, a mix of active duty and retired personnel from various agencies, believe the bridge collapse was a cyber attack targeting a major supply chain corridor. By Thursday, she had an update, referencing analyses from experts in various fields, including behavioral analytics, counterterrorism, and national security, who offered a combined two-pronged theory about the bridge collapse. And as she put it on X, analysis from specialists in those fields have said the following. This is their view. Based on their training experience, this was two types of operation. One, penetration testing, where they probe and test to identify vulnerabilities in our responses and defenses, sick. And two, a shaping operation to set the conditions and prepare the battlefield for a potential, and I would say at this point, pretty much inevitable future event. The concern is that other critical infrastructure and disruptions and or hits recently that appeared to be independent, isolated events might just not be after all. For example, remember that Ohio chemical disaster, the train derailment? Which was exacerbated by idiots deciding, hey, let's just make some dioxin, start a conflagration to burn all the minor poisons into something far worse, and contaminate the entire region with deadly poison. That was followed by a string of amazing coincidental food processing plant and etc. fires. When taken in isolation, they may not appear to be that significant, but you put them all together, they could, say the experts, indicate shaping or stacking operations, paving the way for an even bigger event wherein they do any number of these types of operations together, simultaneously or bang, bang, bang in short order. And guess what, folks? They have battalions, at least seven or so communist Chinese troops alone, say various experts like General Flynn, and anybody that can say, hey, what are the odds if you got 10 million invaders crossing into the country without any kind of vetting whatsoever that, oh, even 1% of them just might be terrorists or military or special forces from other not-so-friendly powers, and that would include nowadays the swamp? Well, if a criminal in the White House with his finger on the nuclear button isn't enough, that could certainly paralyze what's left of the United States. So, the critical question that we should all be asking, because government won't, is when will they trigger a multiple episode that can cause that paralysis effect? Some of the indicators, she said, and how many such incidents have occurred within a relatively short timeline, and what they see as a departure from what is normal, are key to understanding it. And her experts believe, without question, that those in charge will make sure any investigation into the bridge crash, quote, goes nowhere quick. One of the goals here is to give the public mental anesthesia while they test this, using train derailments or exposures to chemicals, like in Ohio, when they told everyone to shelter indoors. And then they asked questions like, did they comply? Is this going to be successful at deceiving and causing the desired behavioral change? Hey, remember they all drank the Kool-Aid, took the shots, and wore the face diapers, didn't they? Then they use the media to create the assumptive narrative. They don't want the facts analyzed because they don't want people processing or even thinking about what the truth might be. Because truth naturally leads to questions that simply must not be asked. And that's why the Supreme Court is good if they'll just cover up anything associated with the Ministry of Truth here. Remember that? But it would be foolish and naive, she continues, at the expense of national security, not to question Big Brother's narrative on the Baltimore Bridge demolition, given the level of corruption in spheres of power and influence in this country today. What with many years of experience in spoofing, that's a tactic used in cyber warfare to hack into someone's system and deceive in order to achieve the desired outcome, they recognize that multiple indicators watching the video tell them that it was the GPS signal that was likely hacked, leading them to believe that perhaps they weren't as close to the bridge as they were, and it may be why in the video you see the crazy lean to port and then hard to starboard as they realize they weren't on course in spite of the GPS indicating that they were. In information warfare terms, here are some of the tactics you can see being used now that some of you might recognize. Number one, engineered complexity. Now, as an engineer, folks, this really resonates with yours truly. This is where they throw in nonsensical variables, aka information, but it's really not. It's disinfo. That's a term that they use to lie to you about what it is that they're doing to you. And it's engineered to distract, all designed to keep you from serially processing multiple channels and give you processing overload, preventing people from toggling the different channels of information, i.e., they create decoys to distract you from the truth. Number two, they're trying to reframe the issue by focusing on details that don't matter, by throwing in variables that aren't relevant to the main equation. I remember seeing the thing, could it be tainted fuel? Oh, yeah, you blithering idiots. That's a great explanation, right? Even if the fuel was tainted, what are the odds that you can somehow manage to hit that bullseye with a 100,000-ton ship, in spite of people maybe trying to avoid it? Those are the kind of distractions that are ultimately just plain too stupid for stupid. Says the PSYOP-related piece here, common sense, skepticism, and intelligence are huge overlays, all of which get in the way of manipulating human behavior, so they have to learn to analyze how you can create channel overload while people try to toggle or handle different channels of information, things like the speed of the boat, temperature of the water, etc. Baffle them with bullshit is a term you've probably heard. Number three, they need folks to be loaded up with enough variance to create that channel overload, so you create an error that then they can use to discredit you. One way is to create doubt in yourself, most effective because then people make themselves less efficient when your brain is processing the self-doubt and it propagates into the future. Population, bottom line, is so much easier to dupe today than it ever was 20 years ago. And the dumbing down of the mass population is certainly a big key on that score, folks. If they'll believe that this last rigged election was honest and even the most secure in American history, in spite of all the dead people that voted over and over again, and the electronic paper trails that aren't paper and that they're not going to show you anyway, and that the vaccine is safe and effective, come on. Be honest, what can't they sell you, especially if it's deadly poison? And I'll paraphrase now the last sentence in this piece. The incident, to put it mildly, at the Francis Scott Key Bridge should no longer be viewed solely as a tragic accident, an incredible series of unlikely events all coming together perfectly, as was not planned, but rather as a potential, probably likely harbinger of much more complex and numerous threats facing a dumbed-down and defenseless United States today. Well, and with that, folks, what I want to do is return to this concept of believing impossible things. Because ultimately, I want to suggest, that's the point of the show today, that it will, in fact, be a matter of life and death if we're not able to discern the impossible things and the big lies that we're being fed. And rest assured, there is more coming. So just as a quick recap, I'm sure everybody that's listening is aware of these. Understand that not taking the Zyklon B injection, the so-called not vaccine, and all the boosters after boosters after boosters that destroyed people's immune system, resulted in out-of-control cancers, blood clots, kids dying right and left, and, of course, celebrity mass death because of sudden unexpected deaths. You know, so many things that if people were duped, if they were deceived, if they were stupid enough, oh, that's kind of cruel, isn't it? Well, you know what, folks? folks, killing people outright because of ignorance is even more cruel. I like to quote Hosea, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." This is a place where lack of knowledge will kill you. So understand that. And of course, there are other things, other threats that we're going to have to see as well. I'm going to talk about some of those as we go through this. One of them certainly is the climate change BS. Do we have enough understanding to recognize that it is the sun that is a major driver of Earth's climate, and that while mankind might be able to do some really stupid things like dimming the planet with chemtrails, aka geoengineering, and destroying the balance, moving the jet stream and getting rid of things like the cyclical currents that flow in the oceans, the Gulf Stream and others, and changing climate patterns at least a little bit that way, essentially what they're doing is moving cold and hot air around using things like chemical nucleation to produce local cold spots and more weather extremes. But the bottom line is, if you don't understand that these things aren't accidental, that, oh, yes, there is climate change, all right, and there are elements of it that are man-made, but it's not the main one, and it's not even in the direction that you're being fed. For the most part, the bigger concern, say actual solar scientists, is an Earth that cools off over time. As a matter of fact, a cooler Earth kills far more people than a warmer one ever could. So people are being led to, they're being deceived to focus on the wrong thing. And, of course, longer term, and this is certainly out there, not on the far horizon anymore, but the near horizon, we are seeing an economic meltdown. We're seeing a whole bunch of movement towards artificial intelligence and central bank digital currencies, things that I've talked about and done whole shows on in the past, that ultimately end up in, you know it, the mark of the beast, without which no one will be allowed to buy or sell. Now, they won't even let you eat bugs and worms if you're not a good little slave and have a high enough communist Chinese party or a socialist credit score. So be aware of all of those things. But where I want to go next is to talk about some of the specifics of this latest example, the destruction. And it sure looks, the more we understand it, it looks deliberate. I use the analogy of turning off the lights in a bar and expecting a drunk to hit 10 bullseyes in a row or whatever. That is precisely the difficulty of steering a ship into a pylon that supports an entire major infrastructure like a bridge, especially if the people on board don't know it and they're not helping and they may be trying to thwart it. You've got to make sure that you have enough of a cyber attack to be able to get away with it and do it at the last possible moment. In other words, so much about this not only strains credulity, it defies even logic. So let's talk about a couple of others that just basically make a similar point. I have talked about these literally for as long as I've been doing radio. One of them was TWA Flight 800. If you ever saw what pilots, and literally every pilot that I know refers to it this way, as the CIA cartoon, it was an explanation which defied aerodynamics and gravity and logic that the CIA came up with to try to convince people that, no, you don't have those 700 eyewitnesses who saw a missile. This was a mysterious, never happened before, never happened again, center tank fuel explosion, and it blew the front of the plane off, after which the plane climbed for the better part of a mile in complete violation of all aerodynamics. Yeah, a jet aircraft, folks, with the front end blown off, has a sudden CG shift aft to the rear, which causes it to pitch up violently, probably snaps the wings off. It doesn't arc up in flight and appear to look like a missile. In other words, people that have any knowledge of actual aerodynamics wouldn't buy that BS, but the CIA and their cartoon, they think they got away with it. Well, wait a minute. They were successful there. How about another one? You know it, Oklahoma City, where essentially the holes don't line up. If you look at General Ben Parton, and I've talked about this and interviewed the late Ben Parton a number of times before he died a few years back, it simply is a physical impossibility that little Timmy McVeigh's lone bomb, which still kept growing and growing and growing, but never did get big enough to actually do the damage that was there, and besides which the holes don't line up, and the physical pattern of the damage just basically says, come on, who are we kidding? This was contact explosives. And that, of course, takes us to 9/11, where they got a little bit better at doing it, but ultimately, still, it defies the laws of physics to think that two planes, even if there were two planes, and that is highly suspect, could take out three, count them, one, two, three buildings, all of which fell at free fall velocity into their own footprints, didn't tip over, didn't do anything that you might expect would happen unless it was carefully planned. All right, that leads me to a line that I think is ever so apropos from a guy that I don't really respect very much, certainly not a president that I had any respect, much less admiration for at all, the, let's call it what it was, outright fascist Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But he did certainly tell the truth in this one relatively famous quote, and it's the way we need to start out this second segment, coming up right after the bottom of the hour break.
When I think back on all the crap I learned in high school, it's a wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall. Go to throne.
Back, folks. This is the Come Out of Her My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call. And today, and for several reasons that I'll get around to here in this final segment, we are talking about the question of whether or not the Red Queen was right. This is Alice in Wonderland, actually the follow-on Through the Looking Glass by Lewis Carroll. That conversation with the Red Queen where Alice expresses skepticism that we can believe impossible things, and the Red Queen utters the amazing line, "I can believe six impossible things before breakfast." And like I've said, she would make a good addition to the Biden-Führer's cabinet or to the CNN staff, because that is exactly what these people think, that American idiots need to be dumbed down enough to swallow, believing impossible things before breakfast. I'm going to suggest that that is a that's a sure invitation, folks, to rigor mortis and other, well, things that probably you don't want to sign up for. And the key is, can we develop the discernment? Can we be able to see through these things? I'm going to suggest that, and part of the key is a little bit of understanding of physics, things like chemistry, things like statistics are apropos. For example, if you had any understanding of statistics and what a 12 sigma extreme event is worse than a black swan, it just plain never happens, you probably would have not been able to swallow the big lie about the most honest, most reliable, secure election in human history, when the Biden-Führer, who never came out of his basement, managed to get not just most, but all of the votes, essentially, in all of the swing states after they shut them down, inexplicably, in the wee hours of the morning, and then reopened, and shazam! Isn't it amazing? All these ballots came in. I can believe it, right? Six impossible things after 3 a.m. for the same guy. Yeah, not exactly. So don't be surprised when they continue to think they can get away with this, because so far, at least, they have. Well, at the break, I mentioned a quote from FDR that, again, not a fellow that I admire, but I think in this case, you got to admit, he pretty well told the truth. He said the following: in politics, nothing happens by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way, which is quite an admission, but don't forget that when we're talking about what's going on today as well. All right, let's go back to the example that I think really set things up and sets us off, because we saw once again this week a physical impossibility, something that people should be able to see through, that has, in fact, not only impacted national security, but very well may represent a death blow in a lot of respects, especially if people don't learn the lesson, to the once free United States of America, militarily, economically, and in so many other ways. Because if they get away with this one, you can rest assured there'll be more. Now, let me ask this question, because this is kind of interesting. I've heard people suggest, oh, maybe this bridge destruction was a false flag. And I'd say, no, that's not true. Why? Because the point of a false flag is to convince the people, the dumbed-down public, that there was this attack out there by our enemy. But it was really the people who want you to believe that, that put on the enemy's military uniforms, tried to be pretend to be them, and ultimately they operated under a false flag, and then got you to believe that it was the other side doing something, when in fact it was the one that you weren't supposed to know has done it. One of the probably most obvious examples of a false flag were pirate vessels hundreds of years ago that would raise the flag of a nation that they knew, for example, a boat that they wanted to attack and take was, say it was flying the French flag or the British flag or whatever, well, they'd haul their black flag down with the skull and crossbones on it, and they'd put up whatever the flag is that they wanted to approach the vessel. And as they'd pull up alongside, they'd wave and say, see, we're all friends here. And then, well, they opened fire. Turns out it was a false flag, and it's too late. So that's where the term ultimately kind of comes from, is this idea of using another flag to try and hide a military operation. But wait a minute, that's not what's happening here, right? This wasn't a military operation, or so we're supposed to believe, at all. There was no flag that was employed. The idea was you're supposed to buy the incredible lie that it was just an accident. These kind of things just happen. Yeah, that guy that's the drunk with the lights out, he can hit 10 bullseyes in a row. We can drive this huge container ship into the single pylon that is so strategically important that if we take this out, we'll take the whole bridge down. Aren't we clever? And we can do this even if the captain thinks he's trying to drop anchor on the boat and so forth. What about an investigation? Well, we talked about all this in the last piece here, but I want to just kind of make one more, I would say, thought experiment kind of observation. It goes like this. Why, given that the Biden Fuhrer and the deep state really wants people to think Russia is the enemy, and Ukraine, we're using Ukraine as a basically an intermediary to try to take out a Russian adversary without actually declaring war directly. It's client state. But why not just say, okay, we want World War III. We've been jonesing for it. We're attacking Russia through all these intermediaries. Why don't we just say, Russia did it? Yeah. Wouldn't it be easy to fabricate the evidence that they cyber attacked it? Wouldn't be the first time that cyber attacks have been blamed on Russia or some other enemy. Why not just do that? And I guess the answer is it's not too late. I wouldn't put it past them if it became politically expedient to try to pull that off. But understand this, folks. If it was in the interest of Big Brother to claim that it was Russia who done it, they probably already would have. Well, wait a minute. Unless, again, there's a reason for waiting. Because what we need is kind of like the boat itself, if you think about it. If you pull the plug too early and the huge boat veers right towards the pylon early enough that the ship can still do something about it, override the cyber attack and regain control through one of the backup systems, which should have been functioning, but obviously, there's something going on there too. Well, if it's too early, it doesn't work. Now you have a near miss, and now we got a problem, and now just maybe things get discovered. So it's important to wait. Remember the hold. You've seen the movies like Braveheart and others. Wait until it's too late for the attacking force to realize you're going to put those poles right through their horses and men. Okay, so why not blame Russia? Well, they marry very well, but not yet. So if we're going to have this World War III, we need World War III at the appropriate time when it's close enough to the election that it's obviously we don't have any other choice. And then we'll pull that plug because, hey, they think that the Biden Fuhrer is a wartime president. People will go even for the diaper wear because we can't very well be at war, can we, with nobody at the helm, which is, in fact, what we pretty much have anyway. All right, so one other note that I want to make here with respect to all of these things that people need to be aware of. Let's ask the question, what other kinds of situations may come up? Well, obviously, and this is something that General Michael Flynn has already suggested. I think it's been clear for a long time. We have an open border. We have 10-plus million invaders already come across, unvetted. They have been given bus tickets. They've gone to their cells. Are all of them invaders? No. But are 1%, 2% invaders? Answer? You don't know. I don't know. I guarantee you, Mayorkas, if he knows, he's not telling you. But it's not a small number, folks. It's, General Flynn has suggested, at least 7 battalions of Chinese People's Liberation Army, military age males, special forces, and others that have already come in across the open border. That doesn't include MS-13, the Taliban, and whatever Afghan weapons may have been smuggled in, given that Biden gave them to all of these Muslim militant extremist groups and so forth anyway. In other words, I'll say this again, a foreign military, be it Russia, be it North Korea, Iran, or Venezuela, they would be fools if they didn't take advantage of the open borders to bring in at least a few special forces troops and distribute them. Maybe they'll get their free bus tickets and their Obama phones. and have them ready for whatever is that they think is coming next if they want to defeat the great Satan. Again, why not? It's free. It's low cost. It's a lot cheaper than mounting an invasion with tanks. They're going to just let you come on in. They'll even pay for it if you bring them through the Darien Gap. So don't be surprised by anything is part of the message here. And especially, I encourage people to think about options. Think about expectations. Don't buy the BS, whether it's climate change or the economic meltdown, the blame it on something else. One of the most silly things I heard was, oh, tainted fuel in the case of this ship. Yeah, tainted fuel. That's going to steer the boat into the pylon on command. No. Let's just be at least a little bit intelligent about some of the stuff that they're trying to feed us. Again, don't buy the BS, but for crying out loud, don't be surprised by anything. And recognize that if these flocks of black swans are headed our way, oh, so unlikely. What was the movie that you may recall? There was a black comedy in Hollywood that came out a few years ago that basically used the same kind of a concept. A string of unfortunate incidents. How awful it is that all these things just happened to this poor, people all at once. Well, folks, that's America. Now, I guess what that leads me to as I'm talking about, believing the impossible or failing or not believing the impossible. Here's one. Is the United States under judgment? Well, I won't claim that I know that it is, but I have quoted Billy Graham a number of times because I think he and actually his wife was the one that supposedly said it. But Billy Graham often used it. If the United States, if the Lord God in heaven does not judge the United States of America, he will owe a sincere apology to Sodom and Gomorrah. And there's no doubt that that's true. So I guess if there's anything that would strain credulity, it's the question. Unless you answer as an atheist would, we can get away with it. Where is the promise of his coming? It's been like this since a long time ago, not going to change. Yeah, they don't believe he could possibly judge America for all of its evil, so why not just keep doing it? Have we seen the judgment yet? I think it's entirely possible. Not going to say it is or it isn't, but what I will suggest is, well, never expect to explain things with conspiracy that can be explained by stupidity. That's been true for a long time. I think now we're at the point where, and I've said this for years too, we have to recognize that there are conspiracies. They are real because nothing this incredibly evil happens without careful planning. And that really is where we are today. So, if it looks too impossible to be a coincidence, to paraphrase FDR again, it's not. It's almost certainly a real thing. It is an issue. And just don't be fooled by what we have got coming. All right. Now, as we start to wrap up, I'm going to mention just two more things. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this piece that I do think was interesting, though, because obviously there's going to be a lot of people distracted by the upcoming election. Or will there be an election, right? Who knows? One thing is for sure, if the guy who was denied the presidency in spite of having won the election big time last time was to win, he, at least, is trying to make it clear that there'll be some changes this time. Maybe he won't be fooled. Maybe he won't put Bill Barr back in. I don't know if we should believe that or not. But I do know this, folks, that given what is going on and where we are, a lot of people are going to think that there is going to be a Messiah in the form of an election that will come. And I do think that is a very misguided hope. Because the truth is, the invading hordes are already in place. The ability to take the power grid down is already in place. The ability to pull the pin on the nuclear war is already in place. The ability for Congress to do nasty things, for the invasion to continue. All of those things are already in place. And indeed, if there was an election and if there was a massive enough landslide that Trump could not be denied the Oval Office, then guess what? You can think of half a dozen things before the ink is even dry on the page that would probably happen, including Communist China saying, all right, now it's time to pull the plug and unleash the invading hordes. Why haven't they been done yet? Well, it's not time. So let's talk about one other thing, at least on that subject, just to kind of throw this out. I think it was an interesting thought experiment. It came from the Gateway pundit, Paul Ingrazia, called Revenge of the Swamp. And he's noted that there have been a whole bunch of D.C. rhinos, and the Uniparty is scheming to rig the system and prevent President Trump from ever becoming president. This is a two-part strategy. Have you noticed that just in the last couple of weeks, over a dozen House rhinos, they call them Republicans, have announced their early retirement or their intention not to seek re-election. Well, this ought to raise alarm bells, he said, because This looks coordinated, gee, do you think? And it serves the specific purpose of keeping President Trump off the ballot. Now, there's a lot of analysis here about the Supreme Court and what they said about the Colorado and the Maine cases, and how the majority was not unanimous in saying that this whole 14th Amendment BS was as stupid as it is. No, there were three justices, so-called, that said, well, you know, we might consider it, but not now, at least not yet. We'll see. So the question is, disregarding a lot of the verbiage here, are we going to see the we'll see part? There are certainly a few really suspicious cases in here. One of them, as Marjorie Taylor Greene has pointed out, is Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin. Now, Ken Buck of Colorado, I've known that guy, the rhino there, for a number of years. He, too, has announced he's stepping down. You had George Santos that the rhinos expelled from Congress, all of which is about getting rid of the rhino majority in Congress, making no pretense of it, even though Mike Johnson seemed to be more than willing to sell out when it mattered, or didn't matter, as it turns out. But Gallagher from Wisconsin, rather than step down immediately, announced that he would delay his retirement until after April the 19th. Guess why? Because under Wisconsin law, if he did it too soon, there could be a special election, and they'd put in somebody else to take that scumbag's place. Can't have that. But if he waits till the 19th, now it's too late for a special election. Ha ha! And the seat remains vacant through the November election. So it's almost like he's not only doing the rhino thing, but sabotaging, supposedly, his own party's chances to avoid what they know is coming. Does this kind of stink? Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene says it does. Gallagher's refusal to step down before that April 19th date makes no sense whatsoever. It can only be an act of sabotage deliberately. So she's basically said that if Gallagher doesn't step down immediately, then he should be expelled from Congress. What do you bet they delay that until after the 19th as well? So, again, when you look at all these things, you can see various kinds of scheming going on, and some of it's open, some of it's not even remotely hidden like it might have been a few years ago. Let me ask you this question. If you think about it, remember what a hoo-ha there was on January the 6th of the year after the election was stolen, that the rhinos in the House couldn't dare to imagine that VP would dare to say that the election doesn't look perfectly honest in spite of all the rigged ballots, in spite of the voting machine fraud, in spite of connections to the Internet that weren't supposed to be there. You name it, folks. We've had 3 years now to see just how completely it was rigged, literally up and down one side to the other. So guess what? This time around, you know that if Trump wins by a big enough landslide that they can't cover it up, they won't hesitate to have a real Fedsurrection and do exactly what they claimed the other team was doing last time. This is so transparent. In other words, the message remains. People should be able to see through it and figure it out. Now, I mention all of this because when it comes to believing impossible things or not believing impossible things and recognizing various kinds of contradictions, there's another one that I think is apropos. I sometimes talk about it around this time of year. Depending upon when most of the listeners to this network will be talking about the Passover, I certainly know people that look at the equinox and various ways of calculating when they think the day of the real Passover should be, whether the barley is Abib in the land or not, so forth. You've probably heard and seen a lot of those things. Bottom line is, this year is quite interesting because there is a full 1 month divergence between even people that believe one way or the other that Passover is coming up this week or real soon now or first part of the month coming up, or maybe it takes place later on in April. What's fascinating to me is that unlike the last several years, that means that Ishtar and the appointed feast of the fertility goddess celebrated with bunnies and eggs is happening this weekend. Now, I realize there's a lot of people, and I'm not one of them, who says, oh, can't we all just get along? Can't we all just recognize that we serve the same Jesus, even if he did away with the law? Well, you know what? That's the point. That's part of the thing I've been suggesting we have to pay attention to. It's part of believing impossible things or not before breakfast and trying to rightly divide his word. We can use physics. We can use a little understanding of aerodynamics, chemistry, to recognize when we're being lied to on one front. And yes, we can do the same thing with logic and with scripture to recognize that, well, here's an easy example. 3 days and three nights, as Yeshua said, not once, but three different times, the sign of the prophet Jonah. 3 days and three nights, no how, no way, can be from Good Friday through Ishtar Sun God Day morning. It's not physically possible. You'd have to believe impossible things. Well, maybe it was on the third day. Well, in that case, you're calling the Mashiach a liar. Aren't we supposed to believe he did what he did for us? That he was, in fact, without sin? Well, if he was a liar and the truth is not in him, then he's not without sin. His blood doesn't serve any purpose. So we have to ask the question, which is it to be? Do we really believe him? Or do we believe impossible things and think, well, you know, the Bible, you can't trust it to keep track of the truth anyway. So what I'm suggesting again here is that there are a number of relatively easy things we can look at, even at these times, to recognize when we're being lied to. We may not always be able to agree on what the actual truth is. Does the day begin at sundown? Was Yeshua, in fact, tried on a Wednesday and hung on the execution stake by afternoon on Wednesday, and he gave up the ghost around 3 p.m., give or take, and was in the tomb before the sun went down on Wednesday. So that would be Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, three nights, and Thursday, Friday, Sabbath day, 3 days. Yeah, all of that fits. Do we have to see the truth in order to recognize that, well, Sunday through from Friday cannot be 3 days and three nights? Yeah. What else can we recognize similarly? So I'm going to suggest that all we got to do is take a quick look at some of the things in the Torah to recognize when we have been fed a lie. Now, for my mind, the easiest one of all. And people will say, oh, this word is in the King James. Well, folks, it's not even in the Greek that the King James was allegedly translated from. The Greek word is Pascha for Pesach. We all know what the Hebrew name is. But Ishtar, Easter, Astarte, Ashtaroth, the name of the pagan fertility goddess, was added later. And that was not the term that any of the disciples would have used. They would have known that was pagan. So I got to suggest it this way. We can believe a lot of stupid stuff. But I'm not willing to believe that the creator of the universe, who said some things that I'll read in just a second here about paganism and idolatry, would not be just a tad bit upset by having what arguably most people would say is the most important event in all of human history renamed after a pagan fertility goddess and celebrated with the eggs dyed in the blood of sacrificed children. Oh, can we prove all of that? Well, no, maybe we can, maybe we can't. I tend to think that, yeah, there's plenty of proof that it's true. But on the other hand, one thing I know for sure, it was never, ever named after a pagan fertility goddess. The word Easter is nothing but pagan, and either we recognize simple things like that or we don't. Okay, in the last minute here, what I want to do is just read a couple of things that are important that help to set the stage. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 12 and notice that one of the things that the Creator says is, look, I don't like them pagan gods. You shall utterly, verse 2 of chapter 12, destroy all the places wherein these nations that you're about to dispossess. Why? Because they're pagans. Serve their gods on the high mountains, every green tree, every leafy tree, every high hill. Break down their altars, dash in pieces their pillars, burn their chocolate bunnies and their eggs, well, you know, hew all their graven images down, destroy them, burn them. He's pretty graphic about what he wants here. And don't say the following. How did these nations serve their gods? Did they look at the Ishtar and sacrifice bunnies and eggs? And don't do that, he said. Even so, I will do likewise. Don't do that. Why? Because, he said, don't do this to Yahuwah Yireh, because everything they do, their Easter, their sun god, their bunnies, their eggs, they are an abomination to Yahuwah, which he hates. They even sacrifice their sons and their daughters to their fake gods. Isn't that basically what's being done today? All right, I want to turn next to one final reminder, and I think this is a great way to recognize, don't be fooled, don't believe the lie, the impossible stuff. The end of Deuteronomy chapter 7 says, the graven images of their gods, their bunnies and their eggs, and by the way, don't buy them on sale, folks. because of what is so dramatically and unequivocally laid out here at the end of Deuteronomy chapter 7. The graven images of their gods you shall burn with fire. Doesn't sound like he likes them. You shall not covet even the silver or gold that's on them, nor take it unto yourself, lest you be snared therein. I wonder if that applies to chocolate that's wrapped in gold and silver foil. Because these things, he says, are, quote, an abomination to Yahuwah your El. And further, you shall not even bring an abomination into your house and be accursed like it. You shall utterly detest it, and you shall utterly abhor it. Leave it on the shelf at Walmart. For these, it says, are devoted things. They are things that are clearly devoted to Ishtar, Easter, a fake god or goddess, but nevertheless something that he unequivocally, again, hates. Don't fall for it. There are things we're going to have to know and understand that literally are a matter of life and death, which is why Paul's advice to study, to show yourself approved, along with, yeah, be not deceived, is vitally important. Thanks for being with us. Shabbat Shalom, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.